You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and I'm Eric Clay, your host, and our guest on this hour is Colleen Katow. Colleen, it's good to have you here this morning.
Good to be here.
So Colleen, the way the show starts is with a really big question. Who are you? What do we need to know about who you aspire to be, the values you live, some of the labels you've worn or places you've been? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
That's a lot. Yeah. Feel free to jump in and ask me some questions.
This is good for 3 to 5 minutes. What can I say?
I know. Yeah. Well, who am I? I'm a lot of things. Uh-huh. I have lived in central New York for quite a few decades now. But I'm originally from Long Island. Here I teach Spanish at SUNY Cortland. And I also kind of wear, everything in my life is kind of double. I guess that would be a good thing to start with.
Okay.
I'm an identical twin. There's a lot of doubleness that I just happens.
Okay. So I see the identical twin. And what's other double?
Well, I do two things. I teach Spanish and I'm also a singer-songwriter.
Right.
And so that's my, night job. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love the country. I live in the countryside now, but I also have a house in town because I love the city too.
Right, right.
And I love the mountains and I love the ocean. You know, so there's a lot of opposites in my genes, I guess.
Right, or you just want to embrace it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether, I mean, is it opposite or is it just the
complementary
big reach or just a really big reach?
Right, yeah. Yeah. That's why I love to sing in Spanish, you know, for instance. Uh-huh. And I'm an activist. I've done a lot of activism around environmental issues primarily with my cultural work, with my music,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and kind of joining those spheres of activism and kind of intellectual pursuits.
Sure.
And my music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's cut to your music, and then we're going to start building this up in a stepwise fashion. So what should we play first?
Well, maybe start with the top one, if you can't shout sing. It's just a recent cut. I did kind of a pared down CD, had it mastered at Wilburland, but recorded it in Syracuse. And mm-hmm. this one's called If You Can't Shout Sing, and it's based on quotes by Martin Luther King. But I changed... paraphrased a phrase of his to make the refrain in this, if you can't shout, sing. Because if you can't, you know, walk, run.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right,
to be right. It, because of more enabling, you know.
Right, yeah. Well, here we go.
If you can't shout, sing. If you can't sing, fly. If you can't fly, try. Just keep on moving, moving forward. 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 Work and fight till justice runs like water, and a righteousness like a mighty stream. Some things are so precious, some so eternally true. If you can't sing, fly. If you can't fly, try. Just keep on moving, moving forward. 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 When you rise to the level of love, you seek only to defeat evil systems. Ask nothing in return. Love is creative understanding. If you can't shout, sing. If you can't sing, fly. If you can't fly, try. Just keep on moving, moving forward. 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 Thank you. face of the unheard. But unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word. If you can't shout, sing. If you can't sing, fly. If you can't fly, try. Just keep on moving, moving forward. Keep on moving, moving forward. Keep on moving, moving forward. Keep on moving, moving. If you can't shout, sing. If you can't sing, fly. If you can't fly, try. Just keep on moving, moving forward. 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 Keep on moving, moving forward.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Colleen Cattell. So, Colleen, that's quite a song. If you can't shout, sing. Yeah, it's a great way to start.
Yeah.
And also, I just want to know, all of the music we're going to play today is music that you have written and performed.
Yes. There's one song that I did not write. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, for the selection I gave you, there's two songs. But I was thinking about the trajectory that you had given me about, you know, my kind of trajectory or what kind of interests. Because I do love, one of the songs is in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They will probably hear that next. That's a song by Silvio Rodriguez that's from the Nueva Canción, Nueva Trova tradition in mm-hmm. Cuba.
Okay.
He's one of my beloved artists.
And people can find your music on YouTube.
Correct.
Very easily. Colleen Cattell.
Yeah.
K-A-T-T-A-U.
That's right.
Yes. Okay. So what I want to ask now is, given the life that you value, this you talked about opposites, I put a big reach across the
yeah, I can
the,
see.
You know, and I tend to talk with my hands, which doesn't work real well on the radio.
I know, it's good to see. It's very physical in here.
Well, that's that comes. I'm real white, real poor white in terms of my own background, and there's a lot of talking with hands.
Yeah.
That's my culture, and it's been hard. I've never really been able to contain it, but it's not. It's often not well received, and I often don't know how to really dial it back.
That's one of the reasons why I love Latin culture, kind of a general, because I sat next to this woman once on the plane back from Puerto Rico, because I did some research on, that's what I did my thesis on, was a Puerto Rican poet. And I'll never forget it. I could see her face so clearly because we started talking and I was speaking in Spanish, and she just had a smile on her face from ear to ear. And she's just like grabbing my arm, touching me. She's like, you know, I think there was a study done that Puerto Ricans touch the most of any culture. I'm like, I am so at home. Okay. As long as it was, in this culture right now, it's a little bit,
tricky. Well, it's loaded, and it's loaded for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of conversations about how we be with each other that we haven't had or that we haven't had in responsive ways. So let me get back to the interview. This is all part of it. Given the life that you value now, what were some of the experiences that you needed to have before you could come to be at peace with the life you value now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did you need to learn to be where you are now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the key word is I needed to learn, period. I am very much kind of a moon child, I feel, I'm a Cancer, that's my, and I was always, when I was younger, I would, have these, emotions or feelings of kind of alienated, but wanting to create love and create peace, all those ideals I would think about, but it was just kind of an alienating time a little bit, living on Long Island, and I didn't really have the vocabulary to talk about what I saw. There's another kind of thing with opposites, because the ocean was this beautiful refuge of walking, hours on the beach, and that's your freedom, and it's beautiful. And then you'd see also strip malls and, kind of the worst, seamiest sides of capitalist decadence,
Right.
And that's but I didn't have a name for it. I didn't really, because it was so devoid of culture, or a certain type of culture that was really empty of meaning, like strip malls. But then when I did wind up going to college, I came upstate, went to college, and and then met some really great professors and found a community of mm-hmm. people that were kind of helping me find vocabulary to name what I was experiencing and feeling.
Right.
And so that was one of the things that I think I had to, that was a major shift in my trajectory.
Sure. And I guess I want to, you developed what I would call a paradoxical imagination fairly early.
Yeah.
You, this notion of the opposites.
Right.
And how they kind of, they become more, you become more aware of, when you see them, they're suddenly really powerful presence in your life.
Right.
And you don't know quite what to do with them because you feel like you need to go with one or the other, but you can't because you kind of, you're sitting with both of them.
Right.
And not when, so in terms of spiritual development, that is a lesson that many people don't learn until later in life.
Right.
When they're closer to that point of having the language for it.
Well, you know, like I went to Catholic school for the first 8 years, we call grammar school. And that was another disconnect because I had some wonderful experiences, especially older, you know, when I was a little bit older, like seventh, the later part of that, with really progressive nuns that were into liberation, what was called then liberation theology. I didn't have those words, but that's what it was.
Right.
And you know, taught critical thinking and was and really was kind of resonated with the kind of quote unquote Christian values that were. But other than that, all the other pieces were not there. You know, so what I'm trying to say is that their teaching really resonated with me because I could see in practice what they were doing. They treated us, the young people, as equals. Mm-hmm. They taught us to critically think. They told us about Cesar Chavez and like people that were doing, Martin Luther King, people that were doing amazing work, critiquing, you know, the robber barons and, you know, all those kinds of things.
Camilo Torres, probably.
Yeah. And I really got, I was like, okay, this is it. But then other parts of the institutional church became, you saw the glaring contradictions because it wasn't really like that in the reality of that particular church at that particular time.
Right.
For young women, you know, like me and for someone like my parents, you know, who, because they were poor, you know, we're excluded from church activities. And so that really had a big impact in terms of what my spiritual development kind of turned out to be.
Sure. So you also describe how it was kind of the intellectual rigor of critical thinking.
Yeah.
But also there's an emotional passion that's permissible with critical thinking. Sometimes it's not permissible with other kinds of intellectual analysis. And so you're getting both of those things, which makes the contrast with the institutional church, which could be deeply emotionally satisfying, but it doesn't sound like it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there was something missing. Like I didn't get anything out of sitting in a pew and listening to something that wasn't authentic. Right. But, I mean, I didn't know that it wasn't authentic. I just felt
it
dead.
It didn't feel real.
Exactly.
Yeah. And unless you enact the rituals, I mean, you sound like a person who's also a somatic learner. And if you need to enact something in order to experience it and you're sitting passively observing it, it's not going to fly.
Exactly.
It's just not going to work. So what changed when you went to college?
Well, you know, as I said, and find that was that, you know, there were some parts of that were alienating, but really finding some community there with professors and with students, you know, and close friends. And we did a lot of, in the later years, we wound up doing a lot of activism around issues of Central America. That was when the U.S. was very actively involved in the wars in Central and South America, supporting dictatorships. And I started understanding that world. And largely, I mean, in a major way, through art and music. That was a big way that I learned about histories of what was happening in Latin America.
Oh, really?
And that's what made me gravitate towards, because the artists of Latin America were singing and writing about those things.
Right.
And these, so then I go, oh, and who is this person, who is this Allende they're referring to? And then I'd research it, you know, or what is this Campesino movement? What are Campesinos? Right. You know, all these things, you know, came, and then I started learning those songs and really developing such a love for the language and especially for singing in Spanish.
Wow. So, So how did you pull this into a career? I mean, I can see the passion for the language, right. The passion for the music. So you now have a kind of a performing career, which is in English and Spanish.
Yeah.
And a teaching Spanish.
Yeah.
So how did this...
Well, that teaching part, I mean, maybe I would have done it differently, but I didn't really have the financial means to do anything else.
Sure.
So I studied Spanish so that, you know, it would afford me a career.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really immersed in the academic world at the time. So it just seemed kind of like a natural progression, you know. But moved overseas. And so then once I got that kind of established, then I was able to, it freed me up a little more to do some music too.
Sure, sure. So when you were doing you referred to the activism. What kinds of activism were you doing? What had your name on it, so to speak? And what did you feel like was effective or was worthwhile? Because they're not necessarily the same.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, one of the, I mean, there are lots of different things that, you know, I participated in. I guess one of the ones that I was, had the most investment in, and I still do because there's kind of offshoots of that, mm-hmm. was the movement to close the school, U.S. Army School of the Americas. Right. And for many years, I'd go down to Fort Benning, Georgia, and be part of the singing team and helping to organize musicians and working with, you know, working on getting speakers too, and kind of I was a big part of that movement. And one of the things that that I did, along with my friend Jolie Christine Rickman, who she passed away, but she was an amazing singer, mm-hmm. activist person, just beautiful. We did a benefit compilation disc actually it was just the two of us. We did a benefit CD for the SOA, and then we kind of took it on the road with people who had served time because of their nonviolent activism. Mm-hmm. They spent time in jail, and then we'd show video. It was like a multimedia presentation. We went all over the Northeast, and we went to California with that, and that was a huge piece because you could see, I mean, for so many things, first of all, you have a vast community, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and then I stayed with the organization for a long time and saw how it shifted and changed. And the most recent, I did another compilation CD just a few years back. Mm-hmm. The first one we did in like 2000, but then in like 20, I think it was 2014, I did another compilation because mm-hmm. the other one was really successful. And actually, that experience of traveling around, it taught me so much about the power of the arts to be able to transform and reach people in ways that maybe other avenues wouldn't, because we took the show on the road 1 year, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And we for, you know, pretty intensely for like, I don't know, that for from like January to, you know, October. And then mm-hmm. that when November came and we went to Fort Benning, I was just shocked because all these people would stop me. And there were about 20,000 people at the time. It was really big, mm-hmm. at one point.
What year was this?
That was like, that was around like 2000. Okay, that was a huge, or 2003, I think it was. There were two, I don't remember exactly, but it was the biggest mobilization.
Mm-hmm.
And people would stop me there and say thank you because of, we went to their community and they said, we had no idea that this school even existed. We're here because we heard about it through you guys. And that was like, oh, the light bulb went on, you know, like, oh, this really can work. I mean, people, there is hope because it's not that people don't want to know.
Right. Right. You know? Right. And when you,
they just don't know.
Well, they don't know, but when you also show up in their music hall or in their living room or in their church or in their whatever, wherever you're, or school, wherever you're performing.
Yeah.
When you show up in their space and you have shown that you are willing to go out, then they're often willing to hear, and going out becomes just part of the deal.
Yeah, exactly.
It becomes, and I don't mean part of, I mean, it becomes a real option.
Right.
You know, and if you're just hearing things on the radio or just hearing things from afar, it doesn't have that same potential claim on your heart or that you could do it.
Right. And a big, I forgot to mention that a big, exactly. And a big piece of that too was that it wasn't kind of this one dimensional presentation. Mm-hmm. It was a big part of it was back and forth dialogue,
right,
with people who, with the audience.
Right.
You know, so it was, that was always a huge piece of it. And we took a lot of time to do that and to learn, you know, from about other people's experiences as well. So that taught me a lot about the being effective. You know, activism, mm-hmm, can have an effect, even if it's, you know, creating a larger community and more awareness.
Right. And important effects happen in all sorts of ways. It mm-hmm, may not be that the school is closed. It may be that the people show up.
Right.
And they're sharing their stories, and it's passing around as an alternative, credible narrative about who we are.
Exactly.
As a people.
Yes.
And right, we are, in this paradoxical imagination, we're arming all sides, mm-hmm, in a whole sort of, in a number of ways, which are not going to be great. But, you know, it is who we are. Let's cut to music.
Okay.
And what should I play next? What should we play next?
Well, actually, maybe how about we do go to the Spanish one just to change it up a little bit. This song is called Generaciones, mm-hmm, Generations, and it's a beautiful song that was written by Silvio Rodriguez. For listeners out there, if they're not familiar with Silvio Rodriguez's work, I would just recommend that he is such a poet. He's still doing a lot of music, mm-hmm, in Cuba. I was in Cuba just in July, and that was, I didn't get to meet him, but I met, some people in his circle, and he's just this great, you know, neighborhood guy that gives neighborhood concerts and things now. But this song is, it says, an old man and a child are on the beach, and the old man's very old, his beard is blue, and the child is still a child, is very much a child, his smile is intact, and they're playing with each other, you know, they're playing, mm-hmm, life, the world, and so it's really a song of that connection, mm-hmm, of generations, so
yep.
It's beautiful. Yep.
Se ven jugando en la arena, la mira de mar. El viejo es muy viejo, su barba es azul, y el niño es muy niño, su risa está intacta aún, y juega amor.
que guarde el amor. ¿Quién sabe de una historia que sepa mejor? ¿Quién sabe de un viejo, de un niño jugando en el mar? Y un pájaro blanco que se le ha olvidado volar.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Colleen Cattell. So, Colleen, one of the things that I like to do is I like to ask questions about things that didn't quite, things that change. You know, how do you navigate change? Because I think when people talk about the changes they've been through, we learn about them, and we also learn about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So how has life surprised you and turned out in ways that you would not have anticipated and maybe not even have chosen, but you had to kind of roll with it?
Right.
And what have you had to learn that you may not have anticipated wanting to learn?
Okay. Huh. Well, you know, there's probably a lot of things.
Well, no, I mean, first reaction.
Yeah, first reaction is that I think dealing with loss, I think that's a big part of it. My beloved friend, you know, she in 1 year she was gone, you know, she died of ovarian cancer, and that was a huge loss to not only to me but to, you know, many people in our circle,
right,
of friends. Right. And then and then I, you know, just more recently I experienced a number of losses, my father and my brother. And so I think that, you know, is something, and there's some family turmoil too that definitely I did not see coming, you know. And so I've had to it's still a struggle.
Okay.
Yeah, you know,
okay. So
it's still a struggle of separating kind of, you know, I mean, how much that I can do and should do,
right?
Because I tend to take on, I guess a lot of us do that, you know, take on too much. Like, I want to make this change and to things to be right. But I guess, so it's learning to let go of that.
So when your friend died,
yeah.
What was wounded in you?
Oh, well, kind of the possibility of continuing to work together.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it was a really, I was in a good space of like learning and movement. And so, and I also work really good in, you know, in tandem with someone else. You know, right. I like that partnership. I like feeling that dynamism. Right. So that was a big thing.
So like, the energy adds up to more than 1+1.
Yes.
So where did you take that sorrow?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I did was I really started thinking a lot about our ancestors and just feeling like, wow. Like, I just started feeling like this real connection to people who have gone, not just ancestors, but people who have gone before, you know? And I still see that. I think I'm still kind of in that.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives me, like, really great comfort and kind of, you know, continuing the work.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because one of the things my friend said was when she was really sick, she said, "Carl, I'm the happiest activist alive." Because it was during the Gulf War.
Right.
I said, "Why?" She goes, "Because I'm alive." And that's just been my mantra. You know, I know. I'm glad it made you laugh, because it's just the best.
Well, I've been an end-of-life chaplain, an emergency room chaplain. And so this humor is where life happens.
Yeah.
And what you had described is that you have come to know that life began before you did.
Yeah.
And it will go on
right
after you're gone.
Right.
And hey, I'm glad I'm alive.
Yeah. Let's be happy. I mean, you're here, you're alive, you do. And that was that, there was this, I did this over this, and so that's why it means still part of the journey.
Sure.
And this last summer, I actually did something. I kind of splurged and did this vocal improv workshop at the Omega Institute. And Bobby McFerrin was, he's this presence. He's an amazing presence.
Yeah.
I've never, it was beautiful to just watch him with the one little inflection of his finger communicate with the whole 200 people,
right,
you know. But one of the things that they had there, they had this, I think his name is Alexandre Tanon, and he's a sound meditation expert. Hmm. And he did this sound meditation. It's not usual that he's there. And it is relating to the ancestors.
Sure, sure.
Because I couldn't believe, I was like, yes, I'm going to be part of this. And he had us close our eyes and he did several things. But he brought us into this space of listening, and he had this a gong with him. And our eyes were closed, the room was dim, so it was really in darkness. And I don't know what happened, but the way that he used sound was one of the most transformative things that I think I've ever experienced. It was like this visceral sound that I really felt through sound.
Mm-hmm.
I felt this connection with, you know, the universe and saw all these colors and the ancestors, and I wasn't high on anything. I wasn't expecting anything.
Right.
It just kind of happened. And it blew me away. I was so grateful for that, you know, mm-hmm. to have mm-hmm. that experience, you know.
And your life is in sound, whether it's in the Spanish or English language or in the music.
Yeah.
And so
he took you
to an experience of sound, which you hadn't
visceral,
had.
Like in my whole body and like in my mind, you know, it was really great.
Right.
And I think that I really learned more about deep listening. You know, I thought I knew how to listen, but this really, it's made me listen more.
So what's the difference in how you hear what you listen to now from what you heard when you listened before?
Well, one of the things is kind of hearing all the different sounds that are around.
Right.
You know, because I tend to get really focused. That's one of the coping things about being a twin, because we didn't have a lot of space. So the space mm-hmm. you create is kind of a psychological space where you can tune out.
Right.
Even in a small space, I can tune or just concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I don't know, I feel like I'm a little more heightened to just all the little sounds that are happening, you know, at once.
Right. So you're talking about relaxing.
Yeah.
When you're hyper-focused, there's a little bit of anxiety that go, or a little bit of control that goes with that, I think. And, you know,
yep.
When you're doing it self-consciously, there has to be a little control. But when you can let it go, then you're going to experience the chatter or the little the friction or the other sounds.
Yeah, anything. You know, the creaking of the floor. You know, anything.
Yeah.
So that was quite, you know, transformative. So kind of, I guess the idea is like using that loss to fortify me, you know, in the present,
right.
You know, in the life that I have to live.
Right. And when you process the death of your father and brother and the unexpected things with family, what does that do to who you are? You know, you said that you tend to want to kind of engage more than maybe helpful, or that's what I heard maybe.
Right. But on the other hand, I want to retreat more.
Uh-huh. Living the paradox.
Yeah. Yeah. So, whoa, you know. But so I use the what was that? I was listening to this person say, it was just really funny. It was on a show that I saw, and he's like, you got to go away in order to come back.
Right.
And it was it's okay, you know, I can retreat and try to create as much as I can, like do a lot of songwriting. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of songwriting and a lot of just regular writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's one way of kind of, but you didn't ask really, you didn't ask that. What was your question?
Well, my question was, you know, how have you had to change? Because an experience that you didn't anticipate having kind of provoked you to learn something about yourself that you wouldn't have known and you wouldn't necessarily have chosen to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think all those experiences definitely make me more I try to be self-reflexive as I can, mm-hmm. you know, and so maybe more so. Maybe it helps to be that more self-reflexive and more, what do you call it? Just accepting.
Right, right. I mean, with age, we either become more accepting or we become a little more walled, mm-hmm. walled off.
Yes.
And so how do you talk about having the, you know, you having a twin sister, you having a twin career kind yeah. of thing. How do you hold the balance now? How does the balance of this life look compared to what it looked like 15, 20 mm-hmm. years ago?
Well, I think it's more, it's way more balanced because I'm doing a lot more music, which was there was an imbalance, you know, there, you know,
because
I was teaching more yeah. and not having time.
Right.
You know, so I've been able
to say, you seem awfully relaxed at the end of the semester for somebody who's teaching.
Oh, I've been on sabbatical.
Okay.
yeah. And I've been able to, you know, I mean, I've had a lot of support, like from the institutions that I worked at mm-hmm. to be able to do music in a way that's kind of acceptable to the academy too. So that's been very helpful, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And
what do you mean by that? What
well, like writing about Nueva Canción or mm-hmm. you know, performance and incorporating a lot of that into my teaching.
Sure,
you
sure.
know. So that's been that helps with the balance, and. So I guess it is interesting you're talking about balance because I mean, these are just things that keep happening, you know, mm-hmm. and in this life, you know, trajectory. But I was realizing that you're going to laugh, but just in terms of my own body, you know, right. I was realizing that I was way too overdependent on my right side.
Right.
You know, I was even leaning, you know, I mean, so I'm totally left leaning. I'm like radical left, you know, but I wasn't using my left side of my body.
You're massively yeah. left-handed and left-footed.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. Right-handed.
I mean, right-handed, right-footed. Yeah.
So, even though
I am left-handed and left-footed.
Even though my left side is bigger and my sister Kathy's right side is bigger. It's very funny. But so now I'm just like working on that, you know, like, oh, there's this balance here. So I've been making a conscious effort to be just more balanced in my body, too. Which is really, like, you think, I mean, it took me, you know, 50 years to do it, but, you know, so and it's been good because I was having, like, some, you know, just, you know, my hand was hurting because it was overusing my right hand. So right. I'm like, oh, I got my whole left hand here. Well, let me put that to work.
Right. And because I tend to overuse my left, like I tend to injure my left knee or I tend to injure my, you know, my left shoulder, you know, it's just, that's, yeah. And you want to have it a little more symmetrical.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably we are, you know, born, or maybe we should be all ambidextrous, and then we're not, you know, then one side takes dominance.
What should we play next musically?
Well, let's play. The reason why I put No Ordinary Heifer was, it's just a song I wrote like a while back, and. Because I was thinking,
you got to explain this one.
I will explain it. So, because one of the aspects of you know my trajectory that I haven't really talked about is how important it is to be in nature, and living in central New York and rural, and I just love to see this kind of explosion of local. Food production. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I learned, I mean, from a cottage, you know, like in my own home, mm-hmm. you know, I do tons of herbs and tinctures and wildcrafting. And Cortland County had the first organic, friends of mine had the first organic dairy in Cortland County. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just thinking about that and thinking about the dairy industry. And so I wrote this song a long time ago, just kind of about cow liberation. And it's like kind of a metaphor for, you know, a woman too, you know, just to break free.
Right.
So that's why it's called No Ordinary Heifer. And actually, a couple of years after I recorded the song, my bass player, he sent me an NPR report because there was a cow, and it had been doing, you know, some really extraordinary things. And so they actually said, now this is no ordinary heifer. So I have the recording. If I ever reissue this, I'll use that little clip from NPR. So this is called No Ordinary Heifer.
Okay, and here we go. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest is Colleen Katow, and that was No Ordinary Heifer.
No, yeah.
Now, you're going to, this one's going to make you laugh, because, I mean, my first love was a fifth grade feminist.
Nice.
10-year-old, and this is there is no shame, and there is no put down here, but this was a girl, not even a young woman at that point, who demanded equal treatment with the guys, and in rural America in 1968-69, and she also had the fire of a person whose sister had died from a treatable infection. Mm. But the healthcare was so bad for poor families, and she, you know, and that gave her some fire. And I always thought that she would kind of like catapult out with that fire, but she found a guy who was short, and she was short too. And he was about 3 or 4 years older, and he was an electrician, and he has had a wonderful career, and they have kids and grandkids and great grandkids at this point. But she had this incredible life with somebody who was her equal.
Mm-hmm.
And they had stability, and they had, you know, in terms of, which is like not always easy when you come out of poverty like that.
Right.
And you know, but the sensibility of making the choices that would work for her.
Mm-hmm.
Always remained.
Nice.
And so that's, you know, so that, you know, it's just, it's, you know,
yeah,
this is kind of an off-color nod to my rural roots tradition.
That's
and your
great.
Song is both a joke, but it's also,
no, it's real, for
it's
real.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And that's, and so th- and that's why I say this story.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah,
yep.
Where do we need to go from here? What are the concerns or the issues or the things that motivate you that we haven't touched on? And I'm sure there's a host of them. And I also want to ask you about your self-care practices. But first, what have we not touched on that you wanted to speak to?
No, I mean, I think we've you know, kind of touched on you know, many things. Nothing really comes to mind right now. I mean, I think that emphasizing, you know, how important it is for me to be in and around nature.
Right.
I really love that, you know. So I think that's a big part of, well, because I think that is part of our, I know it for a fact, you know, it's part of why our culture is so messed up, because right. we're so disconnected from nature.
Right. And how is it that you manage to have, I'm going to say there are four major quadrants on this picture.
Mm-hmm.
One is a cottage in the farm, in the rural area.
Mm-hmm.
One is a place in the city. One is a teaching job at a university.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is this music performing and probably mm-hmm. gigging.
Yeah.
How is it that you balance all of that stuff together?
Right. Well,
I mean, how did it come in, either come into being, or what is it that you just say, this is the life I want? How did you come to that?
I don't know. I just keep going.
Yeah. Any one of those could be more than a person could take care
right.
of.
Right.
But you somehow managed to take care of yeah. all four of those quadrants.
For instance, growing one's own food is mm-hmm. is a radical act, you know, and it's really, I think that's really important to do. So mm-hmm.
You make sure you set aside time
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, yeah, for an intense month. And I started cutting back a little bit because I have a really huge garden and it was kind of overwhelming. And now I know how to, it's taken a number of years, but now I know how to do it better, you know, do it. No, I won't say right, but better. So
that it fits your life.
And yes.
You can either give away what you don't use or you don't invest in more than what you
right.
can deal with.
Exactly. Exactly. Or it's okay to just let it get weedy for a while you go off and do some gigs in the
right.
summer.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all right if it gets a little dry because, you know, it'll perk back up with a few
yeah.
days of water.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think, you know, getting a lot of sleep, you know, just trying to stay healthy, you mm-hmm, know, is mm-hmm. a way to kind of manage all the, you know, manage those things.
Right.
But I do feel sometimes that because it's, I have, you know, kind of have different directions,
sure.
that I am a little bit too, I have to kind of, you know, be more focused and less scattered.
So you get scattered. Okay.
Yeah.
And that was the word
yeah.
that was coming to mind.
I think that's been an issue that I've had to kind of, to work on.
Right. So in light of that, how do you understand the nature of your longing in terms of how does that help focusing on that? Does that help you organize some of your scattered tendencies?
Or how do you,
I guess the better question would be coming out of what you had said when you feel scattered.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Right. Oh, then I get centered and I pick up.
But how do you do that?
Oh, well, I usually, kind of do something that I would consider, you know, productive. Kind of just stay home and work on some music and get better at a certain thing.
So you do one task.
Yeah.
Until you get something that's, quote, complete about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's...
Well, that's part of it is completing.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's how I do it. It's like, okay, I'm going to complete this, you know. This week, this is mm-hmm. my goal for now. Mm-hmm. So set up some goals and then try to accomplish them.
Right, right. And you've already started answering the question that I normally end the show with, which is, you know, what do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically, you know, throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly,
right.
yearly? And how do you know you need to do it? Well, scattered in the global sense
yeah.
is a time to do it. But how, what else do you do kind of on that daily,
mm-hmm.
you know, regular basis to take care of yourself emotionally,
right.
intellectually, and physically?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things is I don't think I try not to take myself too seriously. You know, sometimes I think not focusing on myself
right.
is really a better way to go to actually taking care of yourself.
Sure, sure.
You know?
You can't come back to yourself unless you've
yeah.
paid attention someplace
yeah.
else.
So hanging out with other people and talking with them and listening to them. Like actually just today I had this great conversation with this woman that I was getting my snow tires put on, so I just sat down and I walked to the coffee shop. We have a great coffee shop in Cortland, and I was sitting there, and we just struck up a conversation, and then I was like, well, why don't you come sit down? And we just had this great, and I met somebody, you know, new, and it was like we both kind of needed to just talk like that, you know. So it was great. So I think sometimes of that stepping outside, because our culture is hyper individualized, hyper individualistic, and so I think to break from that, because and I mean not to lose yourself, you know, but like collective work is really, really important, you know.
Right.
And keeping one foot in, you know, your own, how can I say it? But doing collective work doesn't mean losing, you know, yourself.
Yourself. But also what you just described, taking it back to your to your music experience at the Omega Institute, when you walk around the world with fuzzy edges, it doesn't mean you're there to glom on to everybody, but you're available, you're hearing, you're responding to others. Whereas if you are highly individualistic, then you are tightly bound. You don't necessarily notice what the others are, and you don't necessarily invite, you don't have an edge that allows them to reach out to you.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this tracks with the difference between being part of a sense of community versus a sense of social organization or institution. Within the organization or the institution, we need those boundaries because that's how we protect ourselves and do our jobs. Mm-hmm. Everything is fairly clearly defined. But in the community, we are accessible in ways we cannot fully predict or anticipate, and we discover relationships and opportunities among equals, which was the, you know, the emphasis you were doing with the teachers in the Catholic school experience.
Right.
That was so powerful. When we walk in community, we are equals, regardless of where we are in the social organization chart. And that's, and learning how to be in both places is something that many of us, I struggle with a lot because I'm really good at the community piece, but I've had to really learn how to be part of an organization or institution because it's not intuitive. They work in very different ways.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true.
But you seem comfortable there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just the other piece about taking care of your, I don't know how much time we have, but I mean, the other piece about taking care is like actually to really, I mean, I think it's important to be, to stay healthy, you know, to eat as healthy as I can, you know, to eat mostly vegetarian, almost exclusively vegetarian, to be kind of my own doctor, you know, because I've had these, living out in the countryside, I've had these amazing experiences with herbs. I mean, as my life changes, different herbs grow around, and I've talked to other people around about that, and it's really true. And so kind of learning that whole world, you know, I mean, I can't just dismiss the medical model either. I mean, there are many, many times when we've needed to, you know, use my family or my partner, you know, we go and we use that, but really to do, that's important part of psychic care is taking care of your body.
Right. But to take care of your body, you have to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And so you have to know, well, I've just had this to drink or this to eat, and this is how I'm feeling. Or, you know, every day after when this particular piece of produce is in season, I feel this sort of way or whatever. I mean, you begin to watch yourself. I mean, that's maybe I've overstated it a little bit, but that seems to be what you're talking about.
Yeah, just being aware of, you know, what you're putting in your body, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of a, but I always take that with a sense of, you know, it can also be a really privileged thing too, you know, because not everybody can, you know, has access to, you know, going out and picking, you know, like fresh dandelion leaves, you know, like, or, you know, you know what I mean? Like I understand that it's almost like a privileged position to be able to do that, you know, even growing my own vegetables, you know, can be because I have the space to do it, you know?
Right.
So I look at it. And again, I don't like, it's not like a religious thing or, you know, definitely a spirituality to it.
The universe doesn't owe it to you.
Right.
But if you have access to it and you don't use it, you're not being faithful.
Yeah.
And see, privilege...
Right, that's a good point.
Yeah. Privilege literally means private law.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we can control ourselves is our privilege. It's the private law. And we collude with others in our class to have these privileges that we share, our private little laws, whether it's whatever. And you can be privileged in all sorts of ways. It's however you dice that up. But to be able to just use what you have in front of you and to be content with it.
Yeah.
And to not want what somebody else has.
Yes.
Or not assume that you need to control it. That's, you know, that's not privilege.
Right.
Yeah. That's just, in a certain sense, faithfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, how can I say it?
Sure.
I mean, I don't think that it, because privilege also has this kind of like, there's a hierarchy, you know.
Right.
To it, too.
Well, yeah. It's and the hierarchy usually begins with the self over others.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're white, that's one
thing.
Yeah. But there also is privilege among the, quote, people who don't have privilege. Because we're always sorting ourselves out into these hierarchies. It's, you know, one of my seminary professors, the matriarch of feminist biblical studies, Phyllis Tribble, would say, you know, we don't write out the patriarchy from scripture because we need to remember how we cope when things go bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't necessarily want to reproduce it, but we want to have the lessons of people who came through with something when they had nothing.
Right.
You know, and that way we don't waste the very much that we may have or feel like we are entitled to it, which is the flip side, I think, of what you're trying to say with privilege. There's a sense of of entitlement.
Right.
Yeah. I've talked too much.
You got it.
No, but we understand.
It's really, it's fun. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's good to dialogue back and forth.
So what should we play to close the show
with? Oh, well, you know, I guess we could play... Take Them Down, just because it's timely. There's a lot of my music is informed by kind of activist, social, like cultural work, you know, like in the spirit of, you know, Holly Neer or Pete Seeger or just a lot of, you know, Billy Bragg, you know, progressive musicians. Mm-hmm. And this song was written by a friend, Ann Feeney, who's done a lot of work around labor issues. And there was a tribute album to her. And so I got asked to contribute a track. And so it's just it's a simple, you know, reggae-esque tune about, nuclear missiles and taking them down.
Colleen, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Here we go. You're welcome.
Where did all these missiles come from? Don't say you built them in my build them up, let's take them down now. Today we stop this deadly game. Take them down, we demand it. Take them down for the planet. Take them down in the name of Mother. Take them down. We have no choice. Savannah River, Seabrook, Shoreham, lies and lies, Vernal, Peach Bottom, Diablo Canyon.